This is Carolina Business Review. Major support provided by Colonial Life, providing benefits to employees to help them protect their families, their finances, and their futures. High Point University, the premier life skills university, focused on preparing students for the world as it is going to be. Sunoco, a global manufacturer of consumer and industrial packaging products and services, with more than 300 operations in 35 countries.
Sometimes the biggest issues or challenges in business or in life come down to the smallest piece that can undermine all of it. Welcome again to the most widely watched and longest running program on Carolina business, policy, and public affairs, seen every week on PBS across North and South Carolina for more than 30 years now. Thank you for supporting this dialogue. Take, for example, finding and hiring good workers. Clearly an important issue for business or any organization, but just getting and keeping workers can come down to something as simple as finding good child daycare. In a moment, we will take a look at these issues, both large and small, facing us now. And later on, he is the executive director of South Carolina's Employment and Workforce Agency. William Floyd joins us.
Major funding also by Blue Cross Blue Shield of South Carolina, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association, and Martin Marietta, a leading provider of natural resource-based building materials, providing the foundation on which our communities improve and grow. On this edition of Carolina Business Review, Anna Bevan Gravely from NC Free, Dr. Joseph Von Nessen from the Darla Moore School of Business, University of South Carolina, and special guest, William Floyd, Executive Director of the South Carolina Department of Employment and Workforce.
Hello, welcome back to our program. Anna Bevan, Joey, good to see you both. Thank you for being here.
Happy to be here.
So North Carolina's not done with their budget. They were supposed to be done sometime in June, July, midsummer. So door number one, door number two, or door number three, what are the choices they have, and how would you handicap how they're going to get to a budget, and at what risk to just people?
Well, one, they always say they're going to be done by the 4th of July is when they tell us they're going to have a budget. But door number one, I would say, is the Senate gets what they want, and so they get casinos, they get gambling. Door number two is the House is not able to get the votes that they, which is where we are now. They're saying they can't get the votes internally to have casinos in the budget. And then door number three is just a whole reverb back to mini budgets. In 2019, there were a whole series of mini budgets that came out of the General Assembly that took apart the budget, and we call them mini budgets because they are all pieces of the budget, just in smaller forms. And with that, it looks, there are some consequences that come with that. There's a lack of member projects, or those special projects that members have been working for and trying to get it back in their districts. Those are going to be much harder to get once you have mini budgets.
What about Medicaid expansion?
I think that is also a difficult scenario with mini budgets. They could pass it by itself, which is what the left has been asking for. Democrats in the House and the Senate have been asking for them to decouple Medicaid expansion from the budget and pass it on its own, and so it's not tied up in all the budget conversation.
You know, let me ask you something about this, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. I know in South Carolina, actually, Governor David Beasley years ago lost to the idea of not having the one-armed bandits and the pari-mutuel betting in South Carolina. He went down for it in other things, but in North Carolina, there was kind of this similar moral type of high ground around betting. So is that a moral debate or is that an economic debate?
I think that is the exact conversation that's being had in the House caucus. There are many people that are saying that's economic, many that are saying it's moral. I think that's where you're getting the real divide and the friction and the inability for Speaker Moore to get the votes.
Okay. Speaking of economic, and our economic scientist, Dr. Von Nessen, thank you. Joey, where are we with inflation? It's 3.2% or so, and people think, okay, it's not bad, but it really is cumulative here. So we've got this buildup of inflation, and how much of a liability is this on personal balance sheets right now?
Well, it's still the biggest threat that we have for the outlook going into 2024. And when we look at inflation, we have to look at where we are compared to where we need to be. So inflation peaked at 9.1% in 2022. The Fed is targeting 2.0%, and we just went up to 3.7%, so a slight uptick because of the energy volatility, the volatility in energy prices. The good news is that inflation is continuing to come down, and when we look at core inflation and throw out food and energy prices, which are notoriously volatile, and look at the underlying inflation level in the economy as a whole, it has been steadily moving downwards. So that's the good news. The bad news is that there are still headwinds that is going to keep upward pressure on prices in 2024, which means that interest rates are likely to stay higher for longer. And so that's going to impact balance sheets going forward.
So you have the double-edged sword, but you have a double whammy. You have inflation that's still persistent, but we also have much higher borrowing costs, which we knew with the rising interest rates. Mm-hmm. But now they're taking root, aren't they? So you've got real cost of higher loan cost and inflation. Is this a tipping point for the economy? Will Carolinians feel this?
Well, Carolinians are already feeling this in terms of higher inflation that has accumulated over the past 2 years, to your point, where we've seen inflation that has been significantly higher than wage growth by about 6 percentage points over the past 2 years. And then you couple that with higher interest rates, and eventually we will see that begin to bite more. It's already happening in the housing market, where we've seen a pullback in sales activity. We've seen an increase in consumer debt. And as I mentioned, going forward, looking into 2024, we still face headwinds, and interest rates also take 12 to 18 months to be fully absorbed into the economy. Mm-hmm. So we have to keep in mind that we are just now reaching that 18-month point since interest rates started going up. And so there are going to be additional effects in 2024, and the Fed is looking at that as well. So we're not out of the woods yet by any means, even though I think it's less likely that we see a recession today than it was 6 months ago.
Anna Bevin, do you see, as we talked about the General Assembly in North Carolina with you just a couple of minutes ago, do you see them addressing these things that Joey just talked about, the science of the economy, not necessarily gambling or money going back to districts for a project or this project or transportation, but the idea that these real economic challenges that the General Assembly can address right now?
Yeah, the largest way they're doing that is through tax reform. And the concern for constituents, for taxpayers, for citizens of North Carolina in just how expensive life is becoming, which I think that's how we're really just talking about it. And to sum up, like, life is just expensive and it's getting more so. And I think the more that the General Assembly can reduce the overall tax burden on taxpayers, the more they're going to have to be able to spend to pay for life. Mm-hmm. So are they addressing it directly by saying these interest rates and these inflation points? Probably in rooms where they're discussing, but how it's going to come across to North Carolinians is through tax reform and a lower overall economic burden.
In about 30 seconds, do you hear dialogue among the politicos around, okay, if it's, as you said, it's mm-hmm. becoming more expensive now, and the Carolinas, both Carolinas' secret weapon was the fact that it was a lower cost of living, but that's slowly going away. Is that becoming an issue? Do you hear that becoming a worry?
I don't think it's becoming a worry because it's still comparative. We still have a lower overall cost of living, and we still got rated number two by CNBC for the second year in a row, number one by CNBC's best state to do business, and that does carry weight.
Mm-hmm. Most people moving in from the Carolinas are coming in from New England and New York and that region of the country.
So the delta is still dramatic.
Exactly.
Okay.
Joey, in about a minute left, right to that point, let's just drill down on housing. Is the cost of housing abating at all, or is it finding a level now?
It's leveling off, but price increases are still with us. It's just not increasing as dramatically. But in most markets, we haven't seen an actual decrease in price levels. And that comes down to inventory. Inventory for new homes has been down. That's because we've been through a decade-long period of underbuilding that emerged following the Great Recession and the financial crash and the housing crash then. But also with existing homeowners now less likely to move, because now that mortgage interest rates have effectively doubled, if you've been if you had a mortgage with 3-4% interest rates, and now you're looking at 6-7, then you need much more of an incentive to move. So both from a new housing perspective and existing housing, inventory levels are down, and so that's keeping upward pressure on prices, despite the fact that we've seen a pullback in sales activity.
And as we know, housing is a single biggest cost for a lot of workers and a lot of families.
Yes.
So we're gonna hold on to that and take that over to our guests. Thank you both. Stay with us. Speaking of guests, coming up on our program, she is the chair and the chief executive officer of one of the largest public utilities in this country. Duke Energy's Lynn Good joins us again on this program. And then also, they were the single largest economic development project in North Carolina history recently. Wolfspeed is building not just a state-of-the-art plant, but a major facility. The chief executive officer of that will also join us. His name is Greg Lowe on this program. Now, the Palmetto State has a unique, separate, standalone agency that is charged to do exactly, and I quote from their website, match job seekers with employers quickly, efficiently, and effectively, and offer a variety of services to assist both groups. A pithily worded comment. This is clearly an overt and proactionary effort by the state of South Carolina for workforce. Joining us now is the executive director of the South Carolina Department of Employment and Workforce, William Floyd. Colonel, I might say, welcome to the program. Nice to have you here, sir.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, Mr. Director, let's start with, you know, one of the things we talked about at the top of the program was we've heard from employees, we've heard from workers, we've heard from organizations, that the linchpin for getting workers is as simple as childcare. Is it really that? Is it that much of an issue?
You know, in South Carolina, we have more people working now than ever before. And each employee who's joining the workforce has different challenges, different needs. One of them can be childcare. So I don't think that is the linchpin, childcare, but it is one of the factors. So sometimes we categorize that as an obstacle for somebody joining the workforce or being able to stay engaged with it. And there are different ways to do that. Sometimes it's a very individualized thing. Uh-huh. Maybe it's just working with the employer about a unique shift or shift arrangement. Maybe it's a mini shift, maybe it's a longer shift. And many employers are trying to overcome that obstacle by marketing a unique shift structure. Beyond that, you know, different employers are engaging with childcare waivers, et cetera. Uh-huh. And you know, there is an opportunity for further developments. We'll be talking about the Coordinating Council for Workforce Development today. And one of the objectives of that entity is to study these obstacles. And that will include childcare.
Okay. Annabella?
What would you say are the top three challenges to a fully functioning, healthy, robust workforce in South Carolina?
So in terms, if we look at, first of all, the obstacle category, the potential barriers to the workforce, that will include transportation, childcare, and housing in terms of having it situated. But I think the number one way to circumvent all of that is through education, training, and skills, including soft skills. And so with that type of background, it is amazing what can be done to maneuver around and avoid and overcome those potential barriers.
Mm-hmm. Joey?
What are the biggest barriers in the rural areas, knowing that rural South Carolina typically sees unemployment rates that at sometimes twice or even more than two times the state average? What are some differences or unique programs that can be offered to people living in more rural areas?
Right. Well, I'm a child of the rural areas. That's where I grew up in South Carolina, and then from there went beyond and have practiced labor employment law in most of the states in the nation. What I've noticed in the rural areas in South Carolina, first of all, there's an untapped potential of workers there. But secondly, in terms of their challenges, digital equity is an issue, connectivity, for example, and also some of those areas don't have the robust education infrastructure that we do in more of the urban areas, and so there's more of an opportunity there. But as we, from an agency perspective, focus on the rural sectors of our state, and we're doing that extremely actively right now. We have a rural initiative focus. We try to address each of those. And so Department of Employment Workforce, is a brick and mortar type of organization, but we're being more versatile now. We are going beyond the brick and mortars buildings that we have in most of the counties to the job seekers. And so, for example, this quarter we are doing SE at Work road trips. So we are going to the parking lots of the grocery stores and having community events there to connect directly with the job seekers. Moreover, we have something called connection points. Connection points are where we make many work centers, many small places for people to connect with work, and situate those in churches and community organizations that we fund them to have the infrastructure to do that, the computers, et cetera.
Mr. Director, you just talked about this term digital equity, and we've heard in conversations just like this over and over again about the last mile, about the broadband connection, and about the barriers, just trying to hang these things on the pole or getting these cables buried. Would it be incremental if you could wave a wand and have complete connectivity across the Palmetto State right now? Would it mean incremental growth, or would it be some type of broad, you know, awakening for those workforce, those rural people that want to work, just don't have access?
Hadn't considered that question before, but I would think it'd be incremental. Because even now, in those areas of the state that don't have robust infrastructure like that, we are going out to them in a more devoted way. For example, the SE Works Coach, where we're bringing the broadband with us, for example. So we are still able to connect with people even though they're out there in rural communities with less infrastructure than one would have. So I would say incrementally, because we're doing it incrementally now, and we're seeing incremental growth now. But if we were to wave that magic wand and have digital everywhere, I think it would still be an incremental response to it.
Okay. Annabelle?
So you mentioned education being a huge part of getting through some of these obstacles or barriers. What is your partnership with technical schools look like in South Carolina?
Yeah, so the workforce pipeline is how I describe it. A major part of it is education. So today's student is tomorrow's employee and worker. And the connection throughout that process is invaluable. So Department of Employment Workforce, mm-hmm. is working with the South Carolina Technical College System, which in my opinion is the best technical college system in the United States. And it was my privilege to serve on that board for a while. Now I'm an ad hoc member of it. But I think with the technical college system, the advantage that we have there is it's more agile and versatile. And so they are able more to shape their programs and certificates and related training very quickly to meet the job needs of the employers. Mm-hmm. So it's a big advantage. Governor McMaster is investing into that pipeline of the technical college system through the GEAR funding. And so they announced just a couple of days ago that millions and millions of dollars have already been spent that is transformative for the students that are getting to go to the technical college system without paying tuition.
Mm-hmm. So what would be a reasonable amount of time before you like saw the effect of that, that investment?
It could be a quarter.
Okay.
You know, it's a very short-term thing. So the Coordinated Council for Workforce Development has sponsored a data study looking at, in fact, a pilot program to look at welders, okay? And through the technical college system, it doesn't take too long to become at least a basic welder, and then there are many other certificates over that. If a welder earns a certificate, that could be in a quarter. We've measured what they were making before they engaged in that and what they're making a year afterwards, and they're more than doubling their wages.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Joey.
What other services does Department of Employment Workforce offer that that people may not know about, that businesses or individuals? What do you think, what are one or two that you wish they did know more about?
Well, from an employer's perspective, one thing that we do very well is customize the services that employer needs. So we call them individual employment plans. And we will come into employers, large or small, and really customize the services that they need and what we can provide. That's something that many employers don't know. They sometimes view us just as a job platform, but rather we do provide that customization. From a job seeker's perspective, there are ways to connect with jobs right from their bedroom or their home, in which they virtually can engage in a job fair. They don't even have to leave their house to engage in a job fair, get interviewed, and get hired through virtual job fairs that we host for them.
South Carolina State House passed the Workforce Development Act. Does that give you more power, and to do what?
I wouldn't say more power, but what we're really doing through that act that the General Assembly passed and the governor certainly supported is living out something that the governor often reminds his cabinet agencies, and that is we're going to cooperate and communicate and collaborate. And I think to that, through the Coordinating Council for Workforce Development, and to that I would add coordinate. And so it's not power, it's just people coming together. That this act brought more people to the table mm-hmm. that were needed to help wrestle with these really big issues facing our workforce and our employers and our job seekers. And by bringing the right stakeholders, education, employers, agencies devoted to that, and others, we have the opportunity to tackle the bigger issues.
What could you, just a quick follow-up with this, Mr. Floyd, is what could you use more from either the State House? I think the governor clearly has your back, Governor McMaster clearly has your back, but what would you like from the General Assembly in South Carolina?
I think at this point the General Assembly has already set the platform for us. This Act 67 was a big step toward really refining good things that are going on in the state and making them better. So our wish list is short now, having passed this large bill.
Okay, Annabelle.
As you're looking to do some innovative and creative solutions or have these solutions, are there other states that you're looking to model or take pieces of?
You know, other states are trying to do similar things, at least from what I read. And I think all states recognize that they have a big challenge in front of them. No matter how large a state or small a state, the challenge is having enough skilled workers for the employers, large or small, that are there. So each state is trying to customize their response to that. And some states have done it different than we have. But I think the General Assembly took a lot of time and effort to really study what's out there mm-hmm. around other states, but more importantly, customize it for South Carolina. There was the act was preceded by a number of hearings and fact-finding, and they did a great job coming up with a set of tools that we can use in South Carolina.
Joy?
What's the biggest surprise that you have encountered since becoming director, either from a labor market perspective or workforce perspective in general, just something that that is new, that has emerged?
You know, let me first of all my experience has been from the private sector, right? For 35 years, I practiced labor and employment law. So when I felt this call to go into public service, you know, we all have perhaps stereotypes in our head about what public service means and also public service employees and leaders. My biggest surprise is how agile and dedicated and devoted the Department of Employment and Workforce is. I mean, there's not many agencies that would be led to a parking lot in the heat of the summer and it's 95 degrees, and they do so with a smile because they know they're connecting job seekers to employers, employers to job seekers, and interacting with other community leaders.
Like what, like the Chick-fil-A of state agencies?
There you go, yeah.
Yeah, not to give them a plug. Are you working more closely with Commerce, South Carolina Department of Commerce, Harry Lightsey's gang? Are there untapped potential within Commerce? We have about 2 minutes left, but I mean, that's a pretty big nut to crack. Right?
Sure. Well, Secretary Lightsey and his team have done an incredible job marketing the state. We have more investment than ever. And as part of that, they realize they do that extremely well, and they want to continue focusing on that. They had some workforce development responsibilities that they transitioned to us through Act 67. So we continue working very closely with Commerce. They They're bringing the employers, and we're helping in that workforce pipeline. Secretary Lightsey was the chairperson of the CCWD, the Coordinated Council for Workforce Development, before I became that. And so Act 67 transferred it to me, but he remains part of the executive team. So he and I and the Commission of Higher Education, the Technical College System, and others, and Superintendent of Education are the core team of the CCWD. So it's a privilege to work with Secretary Lightsey and the rest of the cabinet members.
Yeah, and again, we have about a minute left, Mr. Director. So often we've heard over and over and over again, we have less than that. Do you think it's critical? Do you think finding workers is critical right now in about 30 seconds?
Yes. You know, at more people working than ever before, and we have more jobs coming. And so what we're doing now is critical for today, tomorrow, and 5 years from now.
That's going to have to be the last word, and well done, sir. So thank you. Thanks for being on our program. Please come back. We hope you'll come back.
Thank you. It's a privilege.
Thank you. Dr. Von Nessen, nice to see you again, Joey.
Nice to see you, Chris.
Our best to the Gamecocks, of course, as always. The other Carolina, by the way.
Yeah, maybe. I've heard.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Yeah.
Thank you for
good
being
to
here.
See you.
Until next week, I'm Chris William. We hope your business and your weekend is good. Good night.
Gratefully acknowledging support by Martin Marietta, Blue Cross Blue Shield of South Carolina, Sunoco, High Point University, Colonial Life, and by viewers like you. Thank you. For more information, visit carolinabusinessreview.org.